The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It's Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show. We continue talking college football. I was mentioning Mizzou hitting the field for spring practice, and that they had all SEC performers, first or second team, at all three levels of the defense. And they were just, I mean, every bit of just unpleasant on defense, man. They were just nasty over there. So you're nasty on defense. You have a great kicker. You have the SEC's leading rusher. You have a quarterback who can make plays and also rarely turns the ball over. And then you got like NFL guys with a Z, plural, guys on the outside. I like all of that. I like all of that. Not all of that is back. And in particular, it's not just those guys on defense who are first team, all conference, second team. It's also the DC and a bunch of other stuff. But Eli's going to figure it out. And that schedule looks like an opportunity. Want to welcome on right now. Good friend of the program. That's what I'm going to claim. Gerard Hamilton, PowerMizzou.com. How you doing, friend?
Doing well. What's going on?
Nothing but good. Nothing but good. Let's talk about my evaluation of Brady Cook. I said he's a playmaking quarterback, but who also is responsible with football. I was really trying to not limit him, but I don't know. When you got Cody Schrader and you got guys like Luther Burden who can do all kinds of stuff, what is the idea? What was the idea of Brady Cook, and like, where is he right now?
He's in a good space. He's a good spot. Yeah, your evaluation is pretty good. I do think, you know, maybe some people tend to fight him just a bit because of the weapons he did have and things of that nature. And obviously, when you got a Luther Burden, Theo Weiss, Cody Schrader, those guys to help you, an improved offensive line, of course, you should do better, and you did do better. But Brady, he's just a smart football player. I've been on the beat going into my third year, and I remember in 2022, you know, some of the decisions he made, especially, you know, that was his first year starting, some of the decisions he made with the, you know, the turnovers and interceptions and things like that kind of made you go like, and then you start to see him clean that up in the second half of that season. And then also keep in mind, he had that torn labrum in his throwing shoulder, you know, yep. So that has a big deal with it. So you see in the 2023, you're just seeing the development and the progression. And once they got that K-State victory in week three of last year, you just seen the momentum. And then he ended up, I think by the time they faced Vanderbilt in week five, he broke the record for most pass attempts without without an interception in the SEC. So, I mean, he's a really good player, can do it with his legs, can throw the ball, but, most of all, he's really smart with the ball. I think they only had nine giveaways on the whole season. So Missouri's pretty clean when it comes to that side of the ball.
All right, Cody Schrader, that's a whole lot of yards and a whole lot of touchdowns, too, to replace. So, I mean, it's not likely you do it. So how do you approach it? Because you don't have to have one guy. You just need yards and touchdowns. How do you do it?
Well, I think the running back room, to me, is the position I'm looking at the most, you know, for spring ball, maybe until we get to the season. You brought in Marcus Carroll from Georgia State. Similar running back. I mean, it's almost identical to Cody Schrader. I mean, literally only a few pounds separate these guys. They're the same height. They have similar running styles. Marcus Carroll was 10th in the nation in rushing with, 1,350 yards. Schrader was third. So you're getting kind of like a, similar guy who can fit this outside zone. He's more of a kind of like Schrader. He's like a bowling ball. He just knows how to move forward. So they've got that. Got Nate Noel from App State, who has over 3,000 yards in his career there. I think he's the eighth all-time leading rusher at App State. Then they got a couple of young guys that I think Missouri fans should be excited about. Jamal Roberts, who will be a redshirt freshman. And Kawan Lacy, who will come down later in the fall. He's not here for spring camp right now. And they still got Tavoris Jones, who was a four-star from in 2022. Really, really fast guy. And it's just more so about seizing the opportunity for him. And this running back room, as Drink was saying on Monday, is kind of wide open. You would think it's just going to be given to Marcus Carroll, but they're all going to have to earn it, and you know, it's a free opportunity to take those reps over from Cody.
All right, flip it around. And, like, even Luther Burden, I'm like, I know how great he is. He's going to be greater this year. So let's go to defense. I mentioned, how do you replace all those guys? Well, you go to the portal. And specifically, it's D-line, D-line, edge, linebacker. Talk about some of the guys in the front seven that are here from some pretty big programs. And, like, when we see a guy transferring in from Georgia, for instance, we go, oh, well, he must be a great player. He was a great recruit at one point for sure. But just talk about some of these guys up front.
Yeah, they're missing a lot of talent. They had a lot of great defensive talent, you know, graduate or go to the draft. So I think the biggest thing is they're looking at this defensive line. It's more so just about the two deep. I think for defensive end, yeah, they brought in Darius Smith, outside linebacker from Georgia, as you just said. I mean, he'll play some edge. They like, you know, I think he has the physical profile they're looking for with Corey Batoon and his 4-2-5 defense. They brought in Zion Young from Michigan State. But, you know, they still got Williams Suwanere, obviously. That's the five-star kid coming in. So I think they have talent at defensive end. It's about who fits in the pecking order. I think at defensive tackle, there's a little bit more questions because they, I want to say they lost three or four. I can't think off the top of my head, but they lost about three or four guys from the rotation last year that were all playing, they were all part of the rotation, really. And so for defensive tackle for this team, it doesn't matter who really starts from DT1 to DT4. They all play around the same snaps. So it's about finding that rotation. They got Christian Williams still in place. They got Chris McCullum from Florida. And they got Sterling Webb from New Mexico State, I want to say. It's New Mexico or New Mexico State. It's slipping my mind right now. But they've got some guys, but they've kind of got to figure it out. They've got a lot of young pieces at defensive tackle that they need to work in to see what they got. At linebacker, I think they'll be okay. They lost Tyron Hopper and Chad Bailey. But because those two dealt with injuries so much last year, Chuck Hicks and Tristan Newsom got a lot of chances to play. They started the last three games, and they played really well in two of the last three. So I think they're comfortable there. And then they also brought Corey Flagg from Miami. Yep. So I think they're good in the front seven.
Gerard Hamilton, PowerMizzou.com. He's doing it for Rivals in a big way. Last thing I want to ask you about, and again, this is just over on the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to go back to quarterback, actually. Sam Horn is a guy you'd mentioned. We were talking Brady and injuries and being tough and coming through him and all that. Sam Horn himself, his loss due to injury. What happens if Brady Cook goes down again?
Well, to be honest, Drake said, what did he say? He said on Monday they, you know, the opportunity presents itself. They'll look in the portal. I think that's more of a guarantee. Since I've been here, they've only ever had four scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. Mm-hmm. Even before Horn's injury, they only had three scholarship quarterbacks. So I was already thinking they may look in the portal just because that's what they do. They're definitely going to get a quarterback in the portal, maybe someone who is trying to, you know, compete for a starting job in a Power 5 conference or something like that and doesn't necessarily work out. It's not only big for, you know, what happens if Brady Cook goes down, obviously, but 2025. So this is Brady Cook's last year of eligibility. The thought was if Sam Horn was healthy and was QB2 and all that stuff, either he'd be the next starter or he'd at least be in line to compete for the starting job next year. So the thinking is maybe they get somebody in the portal, somebody who has at least a couple years of eligibility left, so that way, you know, they're a veteran maybe. They can back up Brady Cook this year, help if he goes down, but also compete for the starting job next year. So that's the thinking for right now in spring ball. I mean, he's still going to take first-team reps and all that, but I think just a little bit they're kind of reel Brady back and, you know, let a couple of the walk-ons and their three-star Aiden Glover get tons of work in.
And they're done, like, way, way early this year, aren't they, for spring?
Yeah, so the first practice was yesterday. I'll go out to practice again later today. And their spring game is on March 16th. Then I think they'll have, you know, couple cleanup practices, you know, shortly after that. So, yeah, spring break is at the end of the last week of March. So I think that's usually their MO to finish that up before spring break.
Gerard, it's great information. I appreciate your expertise, friend. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Chuck.
Get him at PowerMizzou.com. All right, I say the spring game is the 16th, and he said a couple of cleanup practices. Big fan of that practice. Big fan of that philosophy, that policy with the head coach, that we use all 14 sessions ahead of a spring game, which is just a session. You get 15, and so a spring game. All right, y'all did this wrong, but we can't really talk to you very much. And so, all right, and we'll give you a CD with some stuff on it, and then you log in, and you and so y'all, but y'all work on it. See y'all later. And you send the kids away. It's better for them to come out for a practice or even two post-spring game. Way better. And you get a little on-field instruction. You did this Saturday in a game-like setting, Friday night in a game-like setting. Florida went Thursday night. In a game-like setting, you did this. We want to go through it one more time because we coached you on this for all of these practices leading up to it. And then in the game, you did this. And so we're taking a practice or two. Big fan of that. So good for them. Reason I was looking at the Missouri spring, because the Sam Horn thing, he was a four-star recruit, a big recruit out of the Atlanta area for Missouri. He's a quarterback out of a place called Collins Hill, which I think Taylor Heineke's out of that same place. But that was, you know, always one of the things. Join the SEC, it'll open up recruiting markets. I don't know. Maybe it does. But I know they got a four-star recruit out of the Atlanta area, and he's a quarterback, and there were high hopes. And then he got hurt, and you know, he's out for the season. So that's Sam Horn, and it stinks for him and the program and everybody. What do they do if Brady gets injured again? So there's your season. Like, you're most teams lose your starting quarterback. We saw even with Garrett Nussmeyer, who's really good and talented and had played some and all that, Jaden got knocked out. It was done, over. So it's just they came down, got a good recruit, injured, out. And you are now looking around thinking, well, if we're going to get a quarterback, we have our spring game on March 16th. What may be an advantage there? Why would Chuck be looking at that? Because the portal this year is April 15th through the 30th. Can't get a kid for this season from an SEC program anymore. That had to already be done. But you can get a kid from another conference. The 15th through the 30th, and so a lot of schools now, they're wrapping up ahead of time, so they can then evaluate other kids who they may need. They want a month to percolate themselves, Missouri's coaches do, and then get into the portal. So the 15th through the 30th, I want to say there was a Dan Mullen edition down in Gainesville where the spring game was like, I don't know, like May 4th or something. I don't know you're going to see that. You know why? Players may revolt. Yeah, I'm going to wait until 3 days after the portal's closed, and then I'm going to let you know how you stand after spring. You think that? See, that used to be what every coach would go out of his way to do. Now, there'd be so much bad press about that. So, no, I think it's going to be this. Give us more time, more runway to evaluate. And so Missouri's just kind of ahead of the curve on that, so good for them. All right, hey, we take a quick break, come back with more.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Wednesday on Chuck Oliver's show. I started the show, if we go way, way, way back, talking about what is possible for the Clemson Tigers this year. And Dabo is a guy that obviously, I mean, he's chest out at the absolute low points. And for whatever it's worth, I said, you know, he finished on a five-game streak at the end of the year. It was four and then the bowl game. For whatever it's worth, it was after the loss to NC State when Tyler got on the phone. And I don't know. I kind of blame the producer on that. You're like, Heath, am I right? Like, if a caller ever stays on the line as long as Tyler and Spartanburg did, that's on the producer. There's somebody back on the board that needs to let that not happen, and that's my opinion. Your call?
Yeah, it's unusual that you get a chance to rebut pretty much anything the coach has to say. That doesn't really work that way normally.
Yeah, and for coaches, call-in shows in particular, they're usually not call-in shows anymore. They're like Twitter in now, or you can hit the text line, or you can, in some places where they're at, you know, Cooper's Sub Shop, then you can write your question on an index card and drop it here before the show, and we'll pick some of the best ones. And so, like, it's anything except old school. Hey, how you doing, Tyler in Spartanburg? And in this case, it was Tyler in Spartanburg, and Tyler wasn't doing well. So it got confrontational, and right after that, they beat Notre Dame, which I was not expecting. I was expecting on the heels of Dabo going chest out there that we didn't understand, and we were just a few plays away. Now, they were not a few plays away. All right, that's some very real problems, and not all of them got solved. However, they did win the games, so I'll give them credit. What was going on up until then was very not good, including, and I had quizzed you earlier in the show, Heath. I said, do you remember this play? You told me in the break, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember the play. There was just some weirdness with Clemson last year at the point at the end of October, and then they did kind of rise enough and the product look enough like the talent that they were able to kind of rally towards the end. I don't know where they are right now, and Kate Klubnin's got to get better, but it was just a weird season for them.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And now the question is, again, going forward, if you are Garrett Riley, you were supposed to be the guy who's going to come in, sprinkle some magic on this, and fix the problem. The problem must have been that the offense had gotten a little stale, and so you were going to come in. It's still Clemson's offense. Dabo always is very insistent about that. It's not any one coach's system. It's the Clemson offense, but you were going to come in, and you were going to be the guy who could change all that. Well, now, that didn't really happen. So you've had a year to work with Cade Klubnik. You've had a year to try and get him on the same page as you. You've got talent behind him to look at, too. If it doesn't happen this year, then the question starts to be, all right, so seriously, then, is the problem that this offense was never nearly as good as people hyped it up to be? It was that you had a guy in Deshaun Watson and a guy in Trevor Lawrence and some elite receivers that would have made any scheme look pretty special. And then Dabo has to say, I'm going to let Wonder Boy really do his thing. Or does it become, okay, let's just say it didn't work and let's go find somebody else. And I'm real curious to see where that goes after this year.
Yeah, the tough part is, all right, we're going to be better and new, and it's going to be really rocket ship north, and you open against Georgia. So go get you some there, Cade and Garrett and everybody else. What else is happening, Heath?
So this is a story that for most programs would be pretty low-key. I actually think it's a little bit bigger deal, and it comes from Alabama. The word coming down yesterday from Alabama that football assistants will be available to reporters this spring and that the press will be allowed to have viewing periods for practice as well. Now, this is not particularly unique or unusual at the vast majority of programs, but the places that don't do it all pretty much have one thing in common. They're Saban guys, Saban disciples who come in, and Will Muschamp comes to South Carolina and says, nobody but me can talk. When you ask an offensive question, even though I'm not the one who calls the offensive plays, I'll be the one who's answering the question, which is making it completely useless to you 95% of the time when you try to get an answer for, you know, how the quarterback's development is coming or something. But this is how it's going to be. And it's going to be because that's the way, the one voice, one message, that's how Saban does things. And also, I mean, think about it, Chuck, every year, it also made it a big deal. If you are one of the coaches in one of those programs, it made it a big deal for you if you made it to the playoff. That was the one time a year that Saban or Kirby or whoever had to let you talk. And so it would be, hey, for the first time since last year, we get to hear from Lane Kiffin at Alabama, for example.
Media thing, yep.
It also, by the way, made it challenging for some of the assistants to market themselves and get jobs. I mean, I could tell this story now because it doesn't matter. I knew Shane Beamer pretty well, obviously, from his time at South Carolina, covering him the first time around. When he was added to Georgia's staff, I wanted him on. He's like, yeah, I'd love to do it. I can't. I'm not allowed to. You know, Kirby's got his rule, and we can't do it. And so, yeah, I could communicate with Shane Beamer, but I couldn't interview publicly or share any conversation with Shane Beamer because that was a no-no. under Kirby's rules. This is the first time, Chuck, that you could really point to something where a Kalen DeBoer is coming in from the outside and saying, we're going to put things my way. And look, do I think that some Alabama fan, if Alabama loses a game, is going to say, oh, the problem is the secondary coach got to talk to the press back in April? Of course not. But you're still, it's so challenging when you come into a situation like this to try and put your stamp on a program, do anything to say, this is a little different without people scrutinizing it. And so the fact that DeBoer is willing to make this choice, I think is smart for him. People are skeptical about him. People are saying, who is this guy? I don't know much about this guy. This guy's only been a coach at a power program for a couple of years. He's new to the South. I think it is completely smart for Kalen DeBoer to do a lot of interviews, to allow a lot of access, to have people understand what he's trying to do. But it's also the first time publicly he's differentiated himself from Saban, and I think that it's interesting.
And he has also chosen a new and different that doesn't really matter to the product, as you said. This is new and different, and it's signaling it's morning in Tuscaloosa or whatever. But he has picked the correct new and different. Have the team come running out wearing chrome helmets with like a crimson outline of a helmet, an elephant's head. They're not going to feel the same thing if you start losing games. I've seen coaches change uniforms or helmets. Jim Donnan at Georgia forever was a red helmet with a white stripe right down the middle, and that's just what it is. He put a thin black stripe on each side of the white stripe, and then he put a shadow on the numbers. You would have thought that he wanted them to resign the SEC the way the fans reacted. What they were really upset about was winning and losing. And so what DeBoer has done is, you're exactly right, he's kind of checked the perfect box. He's letting everybody know, new day, new stuff, we're going to be different. But it's not anything that necessarily any fan, even the most scrutinized fan, was going to look down and go, you know, this new guy, he just started changing things and it matters. Because the uniforms, like, change the uniform at some, literally change the uniforms. There is no alternate uniform at some places. And Alabama will continue to be one of those places.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It still matters, folks. It just gets settled so much earlier, and we pay attention to the old men in the transfer portal. But high school recruiting, the stars, heck yeah, it still matters. Want to welcome on right now, Director of Scouting 247 Sports. I've always said, folks, I'll give you a commercial for them. Like, their scouting and recruiting database, it's free. Like, it's 100% off. You can't do any better than that. So it's a lot of information. I always love the sites there. The team-specific sites, different thing. But if you're looking for recruiting and history and all kinds of great stuff, yeah, head to 247 all the time. Andrew Ivins, Director of Scouting. Welcome aboard, friend. How are you?
I'm doing good. We need to hire you as our PR hype man.
Oh, no, brother. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. And we're going to talk recruiting, and we're now looking ahead, really, because as much as we, you know, are just enthralled by 21, 22-year-olds bouncing around from schools, you know, there still are programs built on, you know, high school recruiting and all. Talk in general about the class of 2025 and the look ahead. And what is the landscape specifically for quarterbacks in this class? Because that's where we always get the most shiny, sparkly things.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the quarterbacks, because I've spent the past 2 weeks kind of watching all the arms in the 2025 cycle. And yeah, you mentioned the transfer portal and just how accelerated things have gotten with the high school recruitments. And, you know, there's a report out there this morning from ESPN that they're entertaining, or the NCAA is going to meet about potentially having a summer signing window. And I think that's more than likely going to happen. That's what the college coaches want. But if that goes through and they approve that, I mean, this thing is going to get ramped up even more. And you're going to have colleges not only looking at the juniors, but the sophomore evaluations will just be so key, which is interesting. I mean, just from a person that has to study these guys and evaluate them, you know, a summer window eliminates that senior season, which is a key developmental year. But back to the 2025 quarterbacks, I think this is a strong group. I think you got four guys at the top, and then, you know, there's a solid pack behind them. So the four at the top, you got Bryce Underwood, our number one ranked prospect. He is headed to LSU as it stands right now. You know, consensus five-star for the industry, a kid that has started 42 games up in the Detroit area. He's got a 40-2 record. Everyone wanted him. LSU, which just produced a Heisman winner, and Jaden Daniels got him. And then the other three I would kind of have in that Fab Four category: Tavian St. Clair, an Ohio State commit. He's from the state of Ohio, big frame guy. You think about the Buckeyes, what they were able to do in the transfer portal, adding Julian Sayin, and just the other quarterbacks they have on that roster. Well, they got another one on the way. And then the last two, George McIntyre from Tennessee, Nashville area. He is committed to the Vols. Josh Heupel and the staff did an excellent job there of making him feel wanted. And I think he fits that high-profile attack. I'm not saying he's another Nico Iamalieva in terms of the athlete, but he's a dangly 6'5" passer. I think he's got an excellent deep ball, so he can get it out fast. I think he fits the balls. And then finally, the last one, Julian Lewis, who reclassified. That is becoming a trend. We saw it in college basketball, but more and more football players are doing it, jumping up a year. He moves into the 2025 class. He's a kid at Carrollton High School, has played a lot of games, 28 starts in the past 2 years, committed to USC. But if you talk to, you know, some of the guys in our network, Tom Loy, Steve Wiltfong, he's looking at other schools, Georgia, Alabama, Colorado, Indiana, Auburn. He's been a variety of different places.
I want to ask you about the physical makeup, because you hit on, again, at least a couple of SEC commits there. You know, Trevor Lawrence was a guy, if you remember Juwan Pass back in the day, there are some, like, really highly recruited elite prospects at quarterback that look at and go, you need to gain 40 pounds. And it's just something going from, like, a 17-year-old kid to, like, a 20, 21-year-old man. There's, like, good weight these kids can put on. I look at George McIntyre and I'm like, you need to gain 40 pounds. I, you know, there are some of these like really tall kids out there that haven't grown into their bodies yet. Talk about McIntyre in particular. And is that a frame you look at? Like Trevor Lawrence, eventually you looked at him and you're like, all right, he's a grown man.
Well, it's funny. The first time I saw George McIntyre throw, it was actually two summers ago down at FIU, you know, the Conference USA program. That's back when the satellite camps were a big thing. And he was throwing there because his uncle is Mike McIntyre, the head coach for the Panthers. I didn't know anything about George. I'm like, I know this kid is 6'5". And he's throwing a good football. And Jim Harbaugh was actually at that camp just kind of following George around. When you look at the frames with the QBs, I mean, in the NFL, it is still king. And our rankings are always projecting towards Sundays, right? Long-term success, where these guys are going to be selected. We say you're a five-star, we're saying, hey, you know, we think you're going to be a first-round pick. That's why we have 32 five-stars everywhere. So that's how we gear our rankings towards the NFL. Height has always been king there. But if you look recently at some of the past few NFL drafts, a lot of guys sub 6 foot, right under 6 foot one, have been selected. Obviously, Bryce Young, he's the exception of the exceptions. But, you know, Stetson Bennett was on the smaller side. Jay Kaner from Fresno State, Jaron Hall, Sam Howe, Malik Willis, and Brock Purdy, they all fall into that category as well as shorter guys. So, you know, we'll see if that continues. It might just be kind of a product, I think, of the pandemic, some of those guys staying in school, Brock Purdy's success, NFL programs looking for guys that have started more college games. But frame is king, and with George McIntyre, I think what's unique about him is he's also a really talented basketball player. Had a few mid-major college basketball offers before it became clear that, hey, I'm going to be a quarterback. I kind of have my theory that once he's not running up and down the court every winter and he gets into a strength program, he's going to be able to fill out a little bit.
Other SEC commit you mentioned there, Bryce Underwood. He's not only committed as a five-star quarterback to LSU, number one quarterback in America. There's this running back in Louisiana, Harlan Berry, number one running back in America, committed to LSU. Number one receiver in America is committed. This big giant lineman out of Mobile, who might be the number one lineman, one of the number one interior linemen in America. I've heard he's all but committed. What are they doing right over there? What are Brian Kelly and the staff getting right?
Yeah, it's if you look at our 24/7 Sports composite team rankings, they only have the number three class right now. But I think if you ask me, all right, you know, what class do you like the most? It would be LSU, and I think it starts with Brian Kelly. You know, recruiting at Notre Dame is a lot different than recruiting at LSU. And when he first got to Baton Rouge, I thought they were struggling to figure out what they wanted to do. It felt like he was still recruiting the student athlete that belonged in South Bend. It's a certain type of kid, and you can't do that at LSU. I mean, you can't recruit all over the country and try to go into these private high schools. And I get it. You know, he had showed up. That's where the relationships were. But for LSU, you know, I always hear from college coaches, I mean, unless you're Nick Saban or maybe a Kirby Smart, it is near impossible to go into the boot and pull one of those kids out. So I think they have recalibrated, put up a fence around the state. We're going to get the good guys from there. And then they're also, you know, going and attacking those high-profile prospects with Bryce Underwood, Joe Sloan, the quarterback's coach there, had a big hand in Jaden Daniels' Heisman Trophy winning season. I mean, he's a big reason why Bryce Underwood's committed. The Corian Moore, to me, you mentioned that wide receiver. I mean, he is electric. I think he opened up his track season 10.65 in the 100-meter dash. I mean, that's a key indicator. But you turn on the tape, it's awesome. And then you watch him in the 7-on-7 setting. I mean, he's one of the top slot guys I've seen just run routes and get open, maybe since like Jaylen Waddle a few years ago and the same type of that. So wow. I think Brian Kelly, you know, he's got a great personnel department. They identified talent early, and, you know, I think they got on field, off field, the decision makers, everything's clicking with that collective right now, and I think there's only more fireworks on the way for them on the recruiting trail.
One more question for Andrew Ivins, Director of Scouting 247. I don't know if you've eyeballed this guy in person, so I don't mean to put you on the spot, but Jared Smith is listed at 6'6", 230-pound edge out of Alabaster, Alabama. Thompson, who's a power in the state of Alabama. That kid, to me, he's about the most impressive-looking edge guy in this class. He looks like, well, I was talking about, you know, add 40 pounds. He looks like one of those kids that's going to get into a college weight program and run and lift for a little while. And that kid, to me, is like the number one exciting prospect in Alabama for the coming season.
Yeah, and Jared Smith, it's funny. You know, we had an Under Armour camp at Carrollton High School. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. All my weeks are mixed up. And as I was standing there watching the defensive linemen go through drills, I'm like, this is the third year in a row I have seen Jared Smith in this type of setting. I mean, he is first off the bus. He is traits. He is everything you're looking for. You know, 82-inch wingspan, 35-inch arms. Why is that important? I mean, he makes it extremely difficult for those corner protectors to get a hold of him.
That's strip sacks, man.
I think with Jared Smith, like, he has it in his body to be absolutely elite. We just have not seen it on tape.
yet. And we're hoping he's going to take that step forward. You know, we've been hoping for 2 or 3 years now, ever since we came out with our 2025 rankings, and it was the initial 100 guys after their freshman seasons. I mean, we've had Jared Smith that high. It's like we're crossing our fingers that he's going to figure it out and find that mean demeanor. Maybe it happens. And, you know, I'm not comparing him to Jordan Ross, who was also out of the state of Alabama that signed with Tennessee this past cycle, so finished as a five-star prospect for us. But Jordan Ross only had 2.5 sacks as a junior. And then he was not only awesome as a senior, but he was one of the best in those All-Stars game settings at the Under Armour All-America game and then at the Polynesian Bowl out in Hawaii. So sometimes I think, you know, we get caught up in not realizing that these kids are 16, 17, 18 years old and they're still growing into their frames. But easy to see why Jared Smith has so many, not only of the SEC, I mean, just really all the college football playoff contenders after him.
And I'm not kidding. He would rather play video games and talk to girls than, like, train for the NFL as a 16 or 17. Like, that's what we all did. And we kind of want to assign these very adult qualities and work demeanor to a kid who's 16, you know? So there's that as well.
Well, yeah, but we're approaching an NFL model. And, you know, I talk to a lot of college coaches, personnel, people as well. And, you know, with the name, image, likeness, with the collectives out there, with the transfer portal, you know, unlimited transfers, we're getting to a point where I think more and more of the programs are looking for the guys they want in the building, guys that they want to be there, because they don't want to invest time in recruiting an individual and, you know, have the collective involved with that individual if the kid's just going to get on campus and he doesn't want it. And you'll see it with the NFL combine this weekend. I don't know who I was listening to, but one of the NFL head coaches said it the other day, you know, the players that come out of Alabama when Nick Saban was there, they were all wired the right way. The J.C. Lathams, you know, the Terrion Arnolds, the Kool-Aid McKinstrys, those guys compete, and they've competed ever since they arrived in Tuscaloosa. And I just, again, with us getting in this player movement and, you know, it getting closer and closer to that NFL model, I think just between the ears is going to be so much more important when we talk high school recruiting. The recruiting's done, right? NCAA got rid of, can't do photo shoots. You yep. can't decorate recruits' hotel rooms anymore. You know, it's getting into more and more of an actual business with these NFL visits.
Yeah, give them a cookie cake and a hat, but do it in the lobby. Andrew, I appreciate your time, friend. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
Andrew Ivins, 247 Sports. He had a blue check before it cost $8 a month. He really did. So that's what you got there. And this is a kid that you go look at him, and because they got video, all kinds of every either from a combine or game tape or the coaches, all 22, whatever. It's high school football, but it's all out there. And so I'm just watching kids in the state of Alabama. I could claim, yeah, I'm deducting my internet because this is for my job. Oh, looking at who Auburn may get. This is my personal time, and it still counts. So I'm looking at who Auburn may get, and I'm like, well, this is the highest uncommitted kid in any of them that are committed now for as late as next February 5th. I think it is. It's whatever it means. It's 49 weeks from now. But I'm looking, and I'm watching all these kids play, and it's a highlight tape, obviously. But then sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just a game tape. And you see kids that can physically overwhelm the player across the line of scrimmage. Because in high school, it's not this way, even in college. In the NFL, it gets to be that way. And then I guess in the SEC, a guy across the line of scrimmage is not going to look like you a lot of times in high school. And so it is about, am I going to play technique or am I just going to be 6'6", 230, and I'm going to blast this kid because he's a sophomore who probably shouldn't be playing, but they only have 19 players on the offensive depth chart. I had a buddy of mine that was in charge. He was it the umpire? Whoever the official is on defense who was responsible for 11 players, and he's a high school ref. And he said he realized, I don't know, a few snaps in, he's like, wait a minute. And he started looking at the sidelines. It was easier to count. If there's seven guys on the sidelines, okay, then they have 11 on the field. Like, that's high school sometimes. Probably not for opponents of Thompson, but you have no idea. And so the result is you have a 16-year-old who's like, yeah, I can just lean on him and I'm going to get a sack. And it can happen. So you have to have an extra special, very forward-thinking, depth of character high school sophomore or junior who says, nose to the grindstone. And when you have that kid, okay, bottle that up. And they exist. It's just not many of them yet. They hadn't grown into that. They're, I don't know, gray matter isn't fully developed yet. They're 16. All right, we break. Gosh, we got to wrap up the show next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I don't know if anybody's pulled me to the side, but I understand the expectation when you're a quarterback here at Florida State and just a player. But as a quarterback, like you said, the expectation here at Florida State is high. And granted, I mean, that's what you want. You want to be able to play at a place where the expectation is high, and it's ACC championship, national championship, or bust.
DJU back in the ACC at Florida State. He will be the starting quarterback. Had a good season last year. Was not great. He had a good season. They open, are they part of the week zero thing? Very unimpressive week zero so far. I want to say they're week zero in Dublin playing Georgia Tech, which I don't, right? We put the Georgia Tech, there are some schools that we have assigned to Dublin. Notre Dame, it makes sense. So Georgia Tech and Florida State, I'm pretty sure, are playing in Dublin. And they start maybe a week early. And DJU is talking about expectations, and that's where he is. Here's, you know what I like about the coming season about Florida State? In the portal era, here is sports rule. As long as we're in the current portal and name, image, likeness era, if you are doing your own personal gray matter season preview and you don't know what to rely on, you don't know what can be trusted? Trust the coaches and the staffs that have a known resume. When you are looking ahead to the season, trust the coaches that have, for instance, like Mike Norvell, just spun gold through the portal. And even convince guys like Jared Verse, who I think would have been a first-round pick last year, to come back and be even more of a first-round pick. And Jared was like, yes, I buy that. So he's just been amazing. And he targeted DJU. And so we don't really know what Florida State's going to be because so much turnover, so many just key performers. I'm betting on the coaches that I know. And Mike Norvell's one of them. Hey, how's that Monday? Wednesday.
Well, the Monday was okay. So, you know, we'll keep it moving, though, on Wednesday. Chuck, it's a little different when you are an SEC head coach and when you are not. And Barry Odom is getting a chance to see that firsthand. Odom, of course, got a few years under his belt as head coach at Missouri, then spent a little time as assistant, now headed into year two in Vegas at UNLV. They are going to start their spring practice this Saturday, Chuck. They're going to be doing it with an event that is called Horns and Helmets. And as part of the event, Barry Odom will be riding a live bull. I don't believe any of the current 16 SEC head coaches are being asked to ride any animals, possibly perform any feats of strength or anything like that as part of their spring practices this year. But it's the entertainment capital of the universe right now. UNLV football trying to capitalize off a big year. Maybe there's somebody with a wallet willing to come out and throw a little bit of coin down to watch Barry Odom ride a live bull. How many animal tranquilizers do you think they're giving that bull? How much ketamine is that bull on before Barry Odom touches that thing?
and two shots of tequila for Barry. There's a story about Mike Shula auctioning off a pie on the back of a flatbed truck in a parking lot, and Nick Saban specifically pointing to that when he got the job, saying, I'm not doing stuff like that. That's a pie in a parking lot, not a Brahma. Wraps it up on a Wednesday. Me, David, Heath, everybody. Back tomorrow. Chuck Oliver Show.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right, which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.